Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the AMAA Martial Arts Masters Blog Talk Radio Show, hosted by the American Martial Arts Alliance, dedicated to building the awareness of professionalism in the martial arts through martial arts management and student development.
Hello, everyone. This is Jesse Bowen, and welcome to our blog radio show. We have so much going on. It's been truly a blessing this past year. The martial arts is now moving forward in so many amazing ways. We've had, you know, since September, we released a Who's Who in the Martial Arts book. We are now coming up into a new year. We're preparing the 2017 Who's Who in the Martial Arts autobiography book. So we really want to put it out right now so we have martial artists that have a story to tell. And this is what we have sort of decided that, you know, the value in the martial arts is in our stories. What motivates you or motivated you to get involved in the martial arts? My purpose as the author of the book is to write a book when someone picks it up, they will become inspired to want to now seek out the martial arts if they're not. Or when a student picks up the book and begins to read about their martial arts instructor, they can feel a sense of pride of their teacher, and they want to duplicate the same positive things that their teachers have duplicated. You know, part of what we've been doing with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum, we put a big focus on American karate, the people that have been a part of cultivating a different culture in the martial arts. Now, we have the traditional side of martial arts, and then we have the sport karate. And as karate is now moving into becoming an Olympic sport, we're trying to raise the bar of the sport karate also. So our program is about all martial arts systems. It's about all people. You know, part of Black History Month this month, I wanted to reach out and pull out some of those pioneers, African-Americans that have made major contributions to the martial arts. We were planning on having Miss Denley, Grandmaster Linda Denley on the call tonight, and she's not going to be able to make the call. But we have Grandmaster Dennis Brown on the call tonight, and if you don't know who he is, well, he's sort of like the he is the man. You know, Grandmaster Brown is he's accomplished so many things, you know, as a martial artist. He holds one of the most outstanding martial arts events in the country, and he's just a total pioneer. If you ever get a chance, and hopefully you'll, you know, not hopefully, but you'll see tonight, that he's a great guy to have a conversation with. I really enjoy having a conversation with him and truly do respect him. And we've got some things that we're doing this year. And it's a part of that synergy that we have about the martial arts, about moving forward. And this is what's happening. Nothing stands still. Everything is moving forward. So not only do we have to continue the traditional things that we like doing, but we have to continue to open up our minds and expand so we can learn to new. So our program is about the past, it's about the present, and it's also about the future. Grandmaster Dennis Brown, welcome to our show, sir.
How you doing there, Master Bowen? You know, I was here kind of smiling to myself as I heard the introduction, and you said everybody has a story. I said, well, my goodness, if everybody has a story, I think I have probably a novel, because I've been around a long time, long time.
Well, sir, you really do. You know, we need to sit down and talk about that a little bit later. You know, we're now in the publishing business, so we need to sit down and talk about that. But, you know, there's so much information, you know, about you on the Internet. You know, when you Google your name, it talks about all the accomplishments you've done. And you're also in our book. You made the cover of our book. Actually, you're on page 60 of the book. And everyone, if you do not have a copy of Who's Who in the Martial Arts, I really would encourage you to get a copy, not because I'm trying to sell your book, but you need to get a copy for all the historical things that's actually happened. And You know, and Grandmaster Brown and Grandmaster Linda Denley are in the book. And when you pick up their and start reading their bio, you know, you get excited. I know, you know, Grandmaster Brown, back in the days, my early days of martial arts, we had Black Belt Theater, and I used to watch a movie that I'd put my uniform on, and I'd get up and I'd start to kick and punch, because I became very inspired by that movie of watching all the kung fu that was going on. And, you know, this is sort of what the book is about. You know, as you're reading the bios of the martial artists that's in the book, you know, you become inspired and you want to get up and do something in there. So tell us a little bit about, you know, I think there's this story, and this program is about you as the individual. You know, as we celebrate Black History Month, the program is really about you and your accomplishments. You know, we celebrate Martial Arts History Month. So tell us a little bit about what motivated you to get involved and become a martial artist. Did you have any idea when you started that you would accomplish and go all over the world, you know, your kung fu, wushu, all the things that you're doing? Did you have an idea that you would be doing that?
Well, in a word, no. You know, if you went back to the high school, because this is 52 years for me that I've been in martial arts, but if you went back to my yearbook and had a reunion or talked to any people who went to school with me, they'd probably be saying, Dennis Brown, are you kidding? That guy ended up being a master in martial arts. You know, it was the furthest thing, I think, from my mind. I took a little karate way back then, but it was like everybody else. I thought that I was going to be a singer. I was in singing groups and wanted to be the next Temptations and that whole thing. And I like to tell people I kind of backed into the martial arts. The high school I went to here in Washington, D.C. at the time, Eastern High School, a little shout-out for them, they were the city champions in basketball, baseball, football, track, and, you know, just about anything athletic they were the city champions in. You know, the problem was I was too small for football, too short for basketball, too slow for track, and to this day, Jesse, I still can't catch a baseball. I can't quite figure it out. So I kind of backed into martial arts. You know, I was looking for something that I could do. My brothers were both track stars, and I ran into a bunch of guys at a little high school across from Howard University. I hadn't started going there yet, and they were doing having these little classes in something we call Chuan Fa. Because remember back then, this was the mid-60s, 65, 66. No one at that time was even studying Kung Fu. I mean, there was no Bruce Lee hadn't hit the screen yet. David Carradine hadn't walked across the desert with his hat on yet. It was just a small group of guys that were studying this Chinese martial arts called the Way of the Fist or Chuan Fa. And I knew what karate was. I knew what all those things was, but what that was, but never really thought about that. I had played around with karate a little bit, but I didn't think I was very good at that because, you know, I was very small coming out of high school. I think maybe I weighed 118, 120 pounds, and I kind of backed into it. I joined this group of little guys doing kung fu in the basement of Banneker Middle School and found out that here's something I'm good at. I could sing, but, you know, nobody was listening to me, but this kung fu thing. So I started training with those guys in the basement of a high school, never thinking that I was going to 50 years later still be doing this and doing it for a living. So I was really blessed.
Well, you know, I can see you as a singer. You know, I can just imagine you sliding across the floor. You know, that's what we'll do at the banquet. We'll get you to sing the national anthem for us this year.
No, unfortunately, I tell people I wasn't one of the singers. I had guys in the five-part harmony. We were those kind of guys. I was the bass, so I just kind of held it down. But I always tell people I can hold a melody, but if you ask me to start trying to lead, that was anything other than Old Man River, I couldn't do it, you know. But, I, you know, it was really something that I thought I was going to do for the rest of my life because I really liked that. I sang with the Curtis Mayfield. We did shows with the Miracles, and for a little group like the one we had, we actually played a couple nightclubs, and you know that was supposed to be my dream. But I ended up working, you know, Washington D.C. We don't produce anything. We don't manufacture anything. It's a government town. So like everybody else, I came out of school thinking I'll get a part-time job in the government, and at night I'll sing in the clubs or something. But I got into this kung fu thing, and just like you said, like everybody else, I started watching kung fu movies and all of that stuff, what we call chop suey movies. There was one theater, and everybody out there would kind of identify with it. One theater in the city that on Sundays played kung fu movies, or what we call Chinese movies, and it was so beautiful because you could go down to that one theater every Sunday in the mornings, and they were showing kung fu, and anybody who was in the karate or kung fu or anything seemed like we all met there. It was kind of like church. We all would sit there and watch kung fu movies. I remember seeing Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. At the time, he was Lew Alcindor, and he'd be in there watching kung fu movies. And I would try not to sit behind him because he was so tall, you know, he didn't have the stepped up seat there. So you'd have to look around, mm-hmm. and everybody had the big afro. So it was hard seeing, but it was a fun time. We started doing that, and we couldn't get enough of it because it was only, you know, every Sunday for one theater. So believe it or not, the way I got really into this thing, I had a little Volkswagen and a little group of guys we used to train with out in the park because we could only get Banneker one day a week. We trained out in what is now Malcolm X Park. It was Meridian Park across from Howard. And we would get out there and work out. But we would get together and we would drive to New York, believe it or not, every Friday night. I'd get off from work and we'd leave and drive 4 hours or 3.5 because we'd be flying. And we'd get up to Chinatown, and they had 5 theaters, the Sun Sing, the Canal, the Bowery. I could name all of them. They all played double features. Now, I know you think I'm a little crazy, but we would literally sit in those. We'd get there and get some cha shu bao, folks that know what that is in China, little bread things. And we'd load up bags of those, and we would watch two movies and then run to the next theater, run through Chinatown, and time to watch two more here and two more there. If we were lucky, we could get in 8 to 10 kung fu movies, finish up like midnight or later, and then we'd get back in my little car and we'd drive back to D.C. just in time for Sunday morning to get out in the park and practice all the stuff we had seen. So believe it or not, we didn't really have an instructor. There was a bunch of guys, Kung Fu Joe, and they had colorful names, Spanish Joe and Jimmy Yee, and everybody had a little handle. And we would come back and just practice in the park what we saw, but there was really no kung fu schools in our neighborhoods where we could train, so we would just train from whatever we could see. So I kind of got my start at like a lot of the early guys, just watching Jackie Chan movies, Snake and Eagle, Shadow, and all those things. And who knew that years later, I'd end up in Hong Kong actually making a movie like the ones we had seen. In fact, the guy that I don't know if I even put it in the Who's Who, but the gentleman Chung Cheer that produced the movie that I starred in wasn't even a bit part. I got the starring role. I found out years later, after I had done the movie, this is how backwards I was. I didn't know till years later that he was the guy that started what we call the chop suey movies with Run Run Shaw and Run Me Shaw and the Golden Harvest and all those guys. He was kind of the godfather of those movies. And I caught him at the end of his career in the early 80s. I ended up going to Hong Kong and after many years of other stuff that we'll get into. But I ended up actually making a movie with him called The Dancing Warrior. And again, I look back at it now, and somebody came in my school and saw the picture of it and said, "You knew him?" And I said, "Yeah, I didn't know it at the time that a lot of the movies The Five Venoms and all of those movies we were watching in the 60s, he was responsible for a lot of those movies. And 20 years later or so, there I am making a movie with him. So it was a long career, but it was a great one. You know, who knew?
Well, that's a couple things there that we are talking about I think is very important. I know as master instructors, you know, what part of our responsibility that I feel is to leave bits of information for the upcoming students so they can have a way to follow. The upcoming masters, having a way to follow, because I know, you know, myself, you know, 42 years in the martial arts, and, you know, it's been such a blessing. And my story is very similar to yours, is that I got involved in the martial arts because I didn't want to get picked on anymore. I didn't want to get beat up anymore. I grew up as an only child, you know, and my dad was a macho of a man. And, you know, I was a, back in the day, you were called a coward. Today we would call it bullying. But back during that time, you were called a coward because you didn't, because that we were at an era in time that it was about the physical part of a man, you know, and you had to be strong, you had to fight, you know, and that was that part. And my no one in my community would believe that I'm a martial arts instructor and I do all the things that I do and have done all the things that, you know, that I've actually done. But this is that part, I think, that when we talk about all the movies we used to watch, it has a psychological part of us wanting to be a part of that. So the more that you focus on something, the more that becomes a part of you. And you don't really realize sometimes, but that's drawing you in. You know, when you become inspired by that kung fu movie and you want to put your uniform on and you want to go out and work out, that's that part that we are programming for our own martial arts greatness. And when you hear people that they wanted, they got into those martial arts movies and they got inspired, you know, I didn't do like you guys. I didn't travel because I didn't have any idea how far New York was, you know, from Maryland until a few weeks ago. So if you got in that Volkswagen and traveled that far, you guys are serious. Yeah. But we didn't have any distractions. We didn't. We were curious about it. We didn't know, you know, what is it? We wanted to be, I guess, a part of that action, the kicking, the punching. I don't even think we thought about fighting. I think it was the excitement of moving our body. You know, it was the punching, the kicking, all the things that, that was going on. But I think that it was really about, we didn't have a lot of distractions, so, you know, we could stay focused.
Well, you know, for me, you hit on a point there. You know, I've always believed, and I teach to my students now, that getting into it for the fighting, for the kicking and the punching, that was all exciting. It was new. Again, but back in the 60s, there was no Bruce Lee around and all that type thing. You kind of got into it for the workout and being in something special. But you get into it for the physical end of it, but you don't stay in it 40-some years. You don't stay in it 52 years for the fighting. I mean, if you only get into it, and I'm pretty much talking to the newer generation now, if you're into it for the fighting, you'll notice that folks will get in it. They'll be in it a couple of years. They'll go out and try it in tournaments. They'll find out either they'll enjoy fighting or not in fighting. Once they realize they can throw kicks and punches and all that type thing, you get bored with it and you move on to something else. It might be that draws you initially, but it is the way of life, the martial way of life, I know, that kept me going. I just enjoyed the martial lifestyle, all the discipline. I loved all the discipline that was a part of the martial arts. I tell my students, I don't want to train students that are just fighters. Don't get me wrong. They've got to be able to defend themselves. They got to be able to take care of themselves. But I want them to be students of the martial arts. I want them to understand the internal side of it. I want them to understand 360 degrees of martial arts. That is, anything that defends oneself is self-defense. I talk to them, do you know how to eat right? Do you know how to train your body and your mind and your spirit? Are you well-read? Because if you can break bricks and fight in tournaments and do all that, but you can't sit down and tell me anything about the history of your art or anybody else's art. I said, you come to my house, you'll see 600 books in my library, all of them on different styles of martial arts. Most of them I haven't physically trained in. But I want to be a student of the martial arts, and if you become a student of the martial arts, you'll be in it for the rest of your life. Because you can win only so many trophies. you can break up only so much stuff before you start to think about doing other things. And so for me, I wonder, well, how in the world could I still be doing this? I tell guys, it's really not about that. I love going to tournaments. I loved competing, don't get me wrong. And I still give a very big tournament now, and you know that I'm at a tournament almost every 2 weeks. I'm somewhere in the country. But I tell them that's kind of the hobby for martial artists. A real martial artist, we have fun by going to tournaments and competing and breaking and doing forms and doing weapons. But the truth is that has nothing to do with why I'm in martial arts. I'm in it for the lifestyle. And so I expect my students to be well-read. It may sound crazy, but you as an instructor and as a teacher, and especially teaching on a college level, I tell the guys, if you can speak and speak the language and that whole thing, but you cannot read and write, you're still illiterate. And the same way I look at it, if you can fight and you can kick and you can punch and you can do, but you can't sit down and have a conversation about martial arts, if you don't know about your history, the why you do what you do, how it came to be, then you're just a fighter, but you're illiterate. I've insulted some folks by saying that, and they say, well, I don't really care about all that. I just want to be able to fight. So there's nothing wrong with that. There's people that can speak very well, but they, you know, I had an uncle that never learned how to read and write. He was able to work, but I think it opens up so much of the world for you. I heard you say something about me going all over the world. Man, I grew up in a little, in the later part of my life, on a little 1.5 block street in Washington, D.C. called Rom Street in Northeast D.C. And I remember standing in the middle of Tiananmen Square. I remember being in Jerusalem. I can remember being in Red Square in Moscow. I can remember being all over the world and thinking to yourself, my goodness, this is a little guy from Rom Street in Washington, D.C., and the martial arts has taken me all over the world. And that's, I think, you know, that's why I think I'm still in the art. I think I've met so many people. I've done so many things because of martial arts and the people that you meet, if you go back and say, well, tell me everything you've done. Yeah, I've done weapons. I've done fighting. I've done forms. I've produced tournaments. I've competed in tournaments. But if you want to really get me excited, I like talking about it. When I talk to people, is tell me what you've done as a martial artist. What has the martial arts done for you? And what have you used the martial arts for? How have you used the martial arts to do things for other people? Whose lives have you changed? And when you sit down and start dragging those things out, I can't even imagine the things you must have done to people you've reached in 40, 50 years of studying martial arts.
Well, I think that's the really – you hit on a couple of key points. And what would I say to a new person starting into the martial arts? And this is what I've discovered since we've written the book. And that is that if you ask someone, who is Grandmaster Joan Ri, and you don't know the answer,
yeah,
you need to be educated. Someone instructed me to say, well – I don't study Taekwondo. That doesn't matter. What really matters is your students know, okay, where did sparring gear come from? You know, who do they consider the father of American Taekwondo? I mean, I've studied Taekwondo, karate, so many things on my way up to, and it's not about the one thing, but I think that that's the part that we have to do as martial artists. It's important that we educate our students. Or if not, that history will be gone. And then you have something else. You know, the things that we focus on as the discipline, respect, the courtesy. And I realize that we're having generational changes. That doesn't take away. When someone comes into my dojo, I don't care what generation you're in. You're now in Hanshi land, you know, and so here, you know, and our word for this year, because every year we set goals. Our word this year is think, you know, we have so much technology, we no longer have to think. You can press a button and it will do it for you. I don't have to walk to the library. I don't have to make logical decisions because a lot of these decisions are push a button. You know, I don't have to have the critical thinking. And therefore, I don't really have to read. We got Audible books. We have all of these other things. We don't have to sit down, take time to read a book because we can listen. So we are reformatting the human brain through technology. Yeah. I feel that now I'm a tech guy. You know, we do everything from online classes, everything. And I'm a tech person, but yet and still, you still must have that sense in your training as a teacher that your students have to become knowledgeable. They have to not do the technique, but they have to understand the technique. And that's sort of what makes the difference. And I think for myself as a teacher, when I cannot teach that way, I will, okay, I'm no longer teaching. I just train myself. Go train my grandchildren only, because I think that's important for us because as we're talking about the martial arts, you know, what it is, the direction that's going on, that it's going to, and key point that you made, sometimes we have the changes in the martial arts is because the student is ignorant. Now again, we're using that word, but we're saying ignorant means non-knowledgeable. It's not a bad word. It means that you don't know. That's the reason the importance of the instructor to leave his legacy, to leave that book, to leave that video, to leave that knowledge that Grasshopper can now follow because when you now have a student and you can be training with that student, he goes off and they open up their martial arts school and you go because you're not there right there with him, you will see that he is going to form his own system and his own way of training. So we know that's going to happen, but keeping some of the general knowledge about, you know, the way that I teach, what I'm doing, because you're the carrier of the legacy, and we understand you're going to add your personality. But we want to make sure that you sow that seed in fertile soil so the art can continue to grow and not die on the vine.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. So, I talk about and I challenge everybody out there, become not just a martial artist, become a student of the art. You know, I haven't studied all the arts, but, you know, I can sit down and tell you about Tang Soo Do or for a Taekwondo, how it came about. I can tell you about Korean, Japanese, Okinawa. I have a full shelf on Bushido. And they said, well, aren't you a Kung Fu guy? See, yeah, guys, but I got books on Capoeira. I want to know about martial arts. I'm a martial artist. Now, obviously, I'm a musician. I don't mean I play every type of music, but I'm a musician, so I love music of all types. And I think if you're going to be in it for a long time, you have to love the arts. Because martial arts is martial arts. You and I have talked about this theory that I have that America's a fickle country anyway. It gets tired of stuff. I talked about how I believe that in the 50s, and I'm telling my age now, but in the 50s it was all about judo. There were other arts, but we just called everything judo. And that's because the soldiers coming back from Japan, they did judo. In the 60s, Grandmaster Jun Ri, who you mentioned, he arrived in Texas with his Korean art and Taekwondo and it was with all these amazing kicks and being able to jump and fly through the air. And I can remember I was there. I was in it at that time. I actually studied with Grandmaster Jun Ri in the 60s. But that was the hottest thing going. We didn't want to be throwing. Judo was still around, but Taekwondo ruled. And by the 70s, when our Bruce Lee came along, being a Kung Fu guy, I'll just be honest with everybody out there, we owned the 70s. It was all about Kung Fu fighting. Wasn't Curtis Mayfield singing about it? He was Kung Fu fighting, and Carradine was walking across the desert whispering at people, and everybody wanted to do Kung Fu. But lo and behold, come around the 80s, it wasn't us anymore. It jumped around, and we said, well, what's it going to be now? 10 years, it was all about ninjutsu. Ninjutsu, it was the look at the movies. Everything was the American Ninja, the Ninja Turtles. If it didn't have ninja in it, it wasn't a hot thing. Now, I didn't say judo disappeared or taekwondo or kung fu, but it was the decade of ninjutsu. And in the 90s, and you can check me on this, we thought it was going to be something even more jumped up, and it turned into Taibo. And Billy and Taibo owned it all. I mean, I know, I don't know about you, but people were telling me you can still have martial arts classes, but if you want to keep your doors open and you want to be able to pay your rent, you had better put some Taibo classes or something like that, kickboxing or cardio, something in there. And for that decade, it was all about that. And just when we thought nobody wants to take martial arts anymore, it's all about just getting in shape and all like that, along came, if I'm not mistaken, jiu-jitsu. But not jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And if you weren't taking Brazilian jiu-jitsu, it was pretty much nobody's going to come to your school anymore. That's what they would tell you. And for 10 years, it was that. And it's still hot. It's still one of the biggest things out there, as all the other arts are. Taekwondo is still in the Olympics. Karate is getting ready to go in the Olympics. Kung Fu is all over China. But lo and behold, this decade that we're in now, it flipped again. And as we talked about, it became MMA. And all for the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, people have been saying, guys, these traditional karate schools just aren't going to make it because, you know, people only care about MMA. And the 20-somethings will tell you right now, that's what we do. We ain't interested in those. And a lot of schools struggled. But every 10 years, it changes. And we can discuss why. I kind of think it's because the next generation just doesn't want to do what their father did. They want their own hat. They want their own type of dress. They want their own type of everything. They want their own martial arts that they do. And I believe that it's going to change again in the next decade. All of these arts will still be famous. God knows that Kung Fu is still around. It's half all over the world. And Taekwondo and ninjutsu or jujitsu or Japanese style, it's all still around. It's all big, but it changes every few years. So I tell students, you need to be a student of the art, because the more you understand all the arts, especially if you're running a school and you're teaching, the better you're going to be able to survive through all the changes that come along, because you start to realize that all the arts are intertwined. They all kind of came from the same root, and you'll be able to identify with that root and continue to train and be viable in the martial arts. And I'll let you tell them, because I told you what I thought it was going to be next, and I think you're right on the money. The next decade, as much as we're doing all the physical stuff and it's come down to ground and pound, I really believe that the next generation that's coming up now are going to want something. They're going to flip, and they're going to be doing internal arts. You and I have talked about it. I know that's something that you're really, really big in, and you're trying to get everybody to get a heads up, and you got tapes and all types of things out there trying to tell these guys, you got to get ready for this because it's going to come. And those that don't believe, look at what's happening with yoga right now. It's big, and a lot of the karate schools are doing the same thing they said in the 90s about Taibo and kickboxing. Hey, you better get some type of internal art or some type of yoga or something in your school, because the next generation doesn't want to just have all external, all just be who can beat up the next guy. It's a cerebral generation. They came up in their own minds, and they're going to be looking for that martial arts that gives them that thing too. So me, I've never worried about am I going to be able to continue to teach as things happen, because I've always been a student of the martial arts. I can talk about external systems or internal systems. When weapons and all of the Bruce Lee stuff and using staffs, I could do all of that. But I like to think that as long as if you're just one-dimensional, I'm just a fighter, then you'll be viable as long as that's good. But you don't stay in it 20, 30, 40, 50 years without understanding the total martial arts and all aspects of it. So being able to adjust with what the market is looking for. I mean, as much as that sounds kind of a business-like, if you have students that are looking for for baggy pants, and you're still trying to sell bell bottoms because they were popular with you and your generation, your store can't stay open. So, you know, I look at it and say it's not a matter of becoming too old to do martial arts or becoming irrelevant. It's being able to adjust your art to fit whatever the environment is at this time, whatever the, I hate to use the word market, but whatever people are looking for, because the dangers change. And the things that we thought were dangerous and you were defending yourself against in the 60s and the 70s and 80s change. So I think that I tell people as a martial arts instructor, I'm thinking anything, I must teach you how to defend yourself against anything that defends oneself. And I taught you how to beat up everybody in the neighborhood, and at 40 you were dead of stress-related illnesses, hypertension, and didn't teach you how to eat right. And you're still dead, but you could beat everybody while you were alive. So I'm in a martial arts for life. I've got my half a century in, and I'm hoping I'll do another half, I hope. And, you know, I'll be able to still teach the martial arts and feel relevant.
Well, you know, this is great conversation because I think, you know, someone says, well, what makes you an expert? You know, between the two of us sitting here tonight, you know, we have, what, 90-some years in? You know, so that's why we've been there and done that until you get a chance to be there and you get a chance to do. You know, so, you know, this is what the book is about, is the book, Who's Who in the Martial Arts, is really about the amazing stories there. You know, let's go back to the weekend. Then I'm going to bounce back up. I was trying to, Linda Denley, I was hoping she was going to make the call here. Let me just check our lines. Ms. Denley, did you make the call yet? Okay, I don't think she's actually made the call. She was on her way home, so we'll keep our eye out looking. You know, September, when we had the event in Charlotte, I think it was the most amazing event because of the synergy of all those great martial artists, competitors, promoters, haven't seen each other in years. It was like a reunion. And it was like, we look at pictures online of you know, people looking at the book. It's like a frenzy to sort of, look, this is me. You know, that their story is actually there. And, you know, that's what really made that weekend. And I think everything that we're talking about now is the history and the empowerment you can get by, you know, I've got mentors, you know. I mean, I've got, you know, I studied Jack Canfield. Someone says, you're really a good motivational speaker. But every morning I'm listening to Jack Canfield. I'm listening to Bob Proctor. I'm listening to the greatest speakers in the world trying to model myself and my language and how and reading and studying. But these are the things we talk about in the martial arts to receive the greatness is the continual education of knowing who the people that came before you. So when you build a foundation of your own system or your own style, you'll have something to build to be able to build that on. So I think that was the business summit was great. You know, you did a great job in the business summit. You know, Grandmaster Jeff Smith did an amazing job. Grandmaster Lawrence Arthur did an amazing job. We did the reception. Yeah. That whole weekend was, was great. The wives had a chance to meet. You know, some of the guys weren't married at that time, and so it was really it was something phenomenal that we're looking forward to duplicating on an even larger scale at your event in August. The event's coming up, but we'll come back to that before we end. But I wanted, because we could talk all day and get all pumped up because about our belief, but I really want to get back to you because, you know, you're hearing Grandmaster Dennis Brown sharing information.
Well, let me tell you something about that weekend real briefly. I go to a lot of tournaments. I'm at a national event of some type every 2 weeks, it seems, because I'm on the board of NASCAR, also North American Sports Karate. But I got to tell you, that was something special because we over the 50 years, most of those people I've interacted with, I've had special days with or special events with, but to see all of those folks in one place at one time and everybody telling their stories and their life. I shouldn't say this, but I can remember we sat down in the, let's call it a restaurant, even though they had a few other things there. We sat there till 2 or 3 in the morning, just talking about old times. And when do people get a chance to do that? What's so amazing about that Who's Who book that you did is that sometimes we know the people, but we don't know their stories. You talk about what I call her Lady Denley. She's like the cream of the crop for martial arts. I mean, she's in my opinion, she's one of the greatest women fighters that have ever come along, if not the greatest of all times. But I don't know her whole story. I know all the times we spent together, but to be able to open the book and say, let me look at Linda Denley's story. Let me look at Jeff Smith's story. Let me look at Tyari Cassell's story. Let me look at this person and that person and realize, oh, I thought I knew these people, but I didn't know their whole story. And who else has been able to, and being, again, a student of the arts, you know, for me, that had to be amazing to see, get a book like that, because I love sitting down, and yes, everybody knows Chuck Norris, and everybody knows Bill Wallace. The hundreds and hundreds of people you have in there that they should know and they don't know. It just made it so exciting for me. So I keep it on my desk in my office. So anytime somebody comes up, even if it's a friend of mine, I tend to want to turn to their page and say, let me hear, as the guy used to say, let me tell you the rest of the story. Because what I saw was the guy fighting. I saw the guy in the tournament winning. I saw the guy doing forms or whatever. I took the guy's seminar, but I never really knew his total story. And I think it's not like a novel. You don't have, 50 pages of him, but it's capsulized such that I walk away from that book thinking I know a little bit more about Joe Corley. And I was on the board of directors of him for almost 30 years in NASCAR, and I thought I knew Joe Corley, but I didn't know his background. I didn't know all his background. I knew everything that we knew, that we did together. So I just wanted to take that second and put that kudo in for you, because it's one of those things that a lot of people could have done it. Many people should have done it, but you did it. And most of us now are saying, I save it for my family. I want my daughters to be able to pass it on in case, they want to hear at least that story and know the stories about the people who were around me. So congratulations to you. And again, we're going to try to do it big time at the U.S. Capitol Classics. And I told you, hey, let's do this thing large. Let's bring in even more of the legends, if you will, the history, and bring all the history in a room. History in a book is one thing, but seeing history sitting down next to you is a whole different thing.
Well, I appreciate that, and all the martial artists out there. I mean, I truly I'm blessed to have heard a message from God and moved on the message. I was blessed that on that journey that I had, people, Grandmaster Corley, Grandmaster Smith, Professor, Gary Lee, you're on the cover of the book, Michael Jai White, It's just totally, I don't really know how to explain it. So it wasn't a book that's written. The book is not even about that, and the effects from it has been sort of a domino effects of opening up doors and great opportunities. And that's what we have to think about as martial artists, as individuals. If you stick yourself in a hole, you will be in a hole. But if you understand, if you now multiply your knowledge and now you share your knowledge, your legacy, it grows, and your system grows, it continues. And when you die, it doesn't have to end, because the story should continue. But if you're, but that's the great thing about print, it helps to put you in a place. Now, one of the things I wanted to, you know, getting back to you, because, you know, you and I, you know, we could probably be great preachers also.
I grew up in a preacher's house, so that's why I talk so much, I guess.
Well, no, I knew there was something special about you. Well, you know, we go back here, and we talk about you and Black Belt Magazine. You know, you're the one of the 25 most influential martial artists of the 20th century. Man, that's really big.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, you as a person that, you know, because I know coming up, I used to, you know, I've seen you at the Battle of the Land a couple of times. I was a small fry. You didn't see me. It was okay. I was watching you and Cynthia. You know, but that's okay. In 2016, it came full circle. It's okay. I grew up too.
Yeah, right.
you know, but that is, you know, when you have that much respect, and you know, if we look at even that Black Belt Magazine, when you make, you know, Linda, you know, she made the cover of, you know, quite a few, you know, Grandmaster Linda Denley of magazines, but putting you in print to say, you know, this is information that's still out on the internet and is still there, that saying that you are one of the 25 most influential people in the martial arts, you know, that's pretty large. And I know that you're – so let's move into your schools and let's talk about your travel. Let's talk about even, you know, you as an African-American, you know, your experience of going to China, because this is what you did. You broke a lot of barriers. It took a lot of courage. You know, so let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, being Black History Month in February here, I get called a lot in this month because, I mean, I've been told that, you know, you were one of the first guys outside of Chinatown to actually open a school, especially in D.C., open a kung fu school at that time. I didn't know I was breaking the history. I just loved the art. My instructor wasn't going to do it anymore, and I just said, hey, I'm taking over the school. And in fact, I didn't even name it Dennis Brown's, though. I wasn't that crazy. I just called it Shaolin Wushu and hoped that nobody would realize it was me running it. But, you know, your career, you go on. I got into the competition end of it and had a lot of success there. Again, not thinking I'm making history, but just thinking that I just love this art. I love the traveling. I love the performing and probably a little bit of the showing off also, I guess, was there, the performance end of it. But in 82, when they decided, I guess right after Nixon had gone over and they had kind of opened up communist China, as we called it then. Well, we actually called it Red China then. And they decided that they sent athletes over here, as they do a lot of times when countries decide to start working together. They exchange athletes. They exchange musicians or people in the arts. Well, they sent their biggest art. They sent a group of wushu stylists to play the Kennedy Center big time here in D.C., and again in 1978. So somewhere around 1982, they decided that we were going to take a group, or they asked, let's take a group of American kung fu folks to mainland China. Well, they weren't calling it mainland. They were calling Red China. And I was fortunate to be picked as one of the athletes to go. And when we got over there, I can tell you, I could talk hours about the experience that we had there, because we were the first ones to go in. And I knew the experience was amazing, because when I tell you that Mao had closed that place down so tight for 50 years or so, that there was three times the type of people that met me when I got there. They were the elders who were over 50 or 60s and 70s. They knew all about me. They knew there were Black people in the world and all like that. They just hadn't seen any in years and years. China had been closed down, and they spent all their time trying to explain to people what, who and what I was. there were middle-aged Americans who clearly knew that there were different types of people, and there were African-Americans, well, not African-Americans, but black people, the planet, but they themselves had never seen any because they lived, you couldn't even travel freely from one province to the next. It seems strange, even in China now. You couldn't leave one province to go to another province without a special pass to do that. They were born, grew up, and sometimes lived in the same area their whole life. So when I walked into a place, they were just amazed to see me. I thought I was Michael Jackson, people following me everywhere. But the craziest part was there were the young kids who didn't know there was anything outside of China. They didn't even know that we existed. And I'd get off a train or in a small area or bus, and the young kids would start running or moving away from me because they were trying to figure, what in the world is that? It was almost like it's hard to be the first of anything. I can't imagine being the first of anything going anywhere, but it was an amazing experience for me, just millions and millions of people, nothing but bicycles, no cars. Again, that's a whole nother story. But the experience for me was just life-changing because I met so many good friends and I told so many stories because the people weren't rude, the people weren't mean, the people didn't think you any less. They just wanted to know about you. And I, not just me, but Americans, period, they just thought we just have to learn as much as we can learn about them because when will we ever see another one? And we didn't know. We were thinking, I've got to learn everything I can possibly learn about this wushu art or this kung fu art, and I've got to learn everything I can learn about these people because we didn't know, will anybody else be coming back to study here, and is it going to open up? None of that was there then. In hindsight, we realized, well, many would follow us. But it was an amazing thing. So Black History Month, I always get that call, you were the first to do this, or the first to be in martial arts and represent America and China, one of the first African Americans. And I tell them again, just like getting into the art, I didn't know that I was making any kind of history. I was just excited to be there. Well, I guess a better word was just so honored to be there to represent, our country and the American martial arts. As they were seeing it for the first time. So we've had a lot of firsts in terms of schools and travel and who knew, again, like I said, who knew that it would take me to Siberia? You know, I actually had the experience of taking the Siberian Express. I'd only seen that in movies from Moscow all the way up into Siberia in the Omsk and spent a month or so there with the people there. And again, it sounds crazy, but looking in the mirror as I'm shaving in the morning thinking, my God, I'm just this little kid from Northeast D.C. How am I able to have this experience? And so martial arts has always been something special like that, and it's opened up. Charlie Lee, I don't know, a lot of people may know him. He's one of the real legends in the martial arts from our area. I remember him telling me 20 or 30 years ago that we've always had good relations in martial arts. Back when in the 60s, I was at Howard University with Malcolm, not Malcolm, but when Malcolm was around speaking in Meridian Park and H. Rath Brown and Stokely Carmichael. I was in college during those years. And, you know, those are some rough, rough times for our country and just in terms of race relationships and that whole thing. Charlie said to me once some years ago, he said, you know, but martial arts has always been open. In the 60s, when you went to junior school, blacks, whites, Asians, every nationality, we always worked out together. We always trained each other. It made no difference what race or creed you were or religion. If your art was good, people wanted to study with you, and they respected you for your art. He said, you know, we were there long before everybody else. And I don't know that I'd ever thought about that. I never thought that I was being discriminated against or anything in the martial arts. I mean, I don't ever remember somebody not wanting to train me or not wanting to train with me or any of that type thing in the martial arts. And I'm sure it was there somewhere, but we were there. Martial arts was something for the inner city kids to be able to travel. And I guess I'm getting there to say that it allowed me to travel and meet all kinds of people from all kinds of places. And I think a lot of you probably have had, a lot of people had that same experience through the martial arts. So it improved my life tremendously. It again, I never thought that I'd be teaching martial arts. It just wasn't something that I thought I would do. But when I met my instructor in the in 1970, I had one of what we call in D.C. a good government job, because if you had a government job and you were under 25, you were on your way. And I walked away from that, gave him a 2-week notice to go and study kung fu with my instructor. And you know, 40 years later, it turns out to be one of the best things I ever did. I don't know if I would recommend it for my daughter. Stay in school, do what you're going to do. But I look back at it, and it's been the thrill of my life, the people I've met and the things I've done and the places I've been.
You know, that's pretty amazing. You know, like I said, your story, and it's really important to everyone that, you know, that we've shared a lot of information, our insights on the study of the martial arts, the historical things that can happen by you moving forward and looking for some form of success in your art. It doesn't matter where you are right now. You take your, when as a martial artist, you learn to take your weakness and you turn it to your strong point. And that's the reason why so many stories start off very similar, talking about a weakness of not being able to defend themselves, and they wind up becoming great martial artists, and now it's their strong suit. So we really encourage everyone to, number one, to pursue the martial arts. Someone was saying to me about a week ago that martial arts and swimming are the two things that can save your life. And it's really important, I think, from my perspective as a teacher, to be able to help. You know, I'm not a preacher, I'm a teacher, but I still feel as a teacher it's my responsibility to help to change the lives of individuals. Any last words or of wisdom and or anything before we go?
Well, you know, I just hope everybody will come out in August. There's 4th and 5th, you know, the Capital Classics, and I'm just so happy that you've decided to bring it to Washington, D.C. and make it a part of the U.S. Capital Classics, because I think that the people that it's going to draw, the richness it's going to bring to the martial arts, I mean, I don't know if people understand the opportunity that you're bringing here. How many martial artists that look at TV or they read everything online, but to be able to say, you're going to have a chance to meet some of the greatest martial artists in person. I mean, in person, up front, and get autographs and get to talk to them. And it's just going to change people's lives. I tell people, not just you yourself. Don't just come and get an autograph and buy a book. And I want them to buy the book. Don't get me wrong. But just think about all the people you're going to meet, and you'll be able to take that book and walk around. And a lot of these legends that you're going to be reading about will be in the room. And I was there in Charlotte, and most of these people I knew, and I can still tell you, I was starstruck. You're sitting there watching, taking a picture with Linda Denley on one arm, and Cynthia Rothrock and Christine Bannon Rodriguez and all these ladies, and I'm hugged all up with them, looking at the wife going, I'm hugged up here with all these superstars. Isn't this amazing? But it's fun, and you know your history makes you a better martial artist. And what better way to learn your history than to have it in a book like Who's Who, but then to be able to take that book and walk around and actually talk to those people up front. So I'm it may sound like a plug, and it is, but I'm saying everybody need to come out to this Who's Who banquet. If you are fortunate enough to be able to to come and be a part of it. If you're able to travel and get there, I would say it may be a once in a lifetime opportunity for you, because when else are you going to get a chance to meet these people? And they say I'm a legend, but I will tell you, I will be there looking for all the legends that I can meet, because there's going to be a ton of them in the room.
Well, that's great. I was trying to see whether or not Grandmaster Linda Dentley, did she ever make the call?
So I spoke to her yesterday. She was really excited about it. She really wanted to be on the call. I can tell you that, Master Bowen. You know, she's in Texas, and we're over on the East Coast. And I believe that she may not. When we were talking about what time we were going to start this show, I don't know that we even mentioned that. You know, we're at two different times. I kept saying, "Well, it's at 9:30. We're going to start up at 9:30." And it may have thrown her off because she's in Texas thinking 9:30, I'm going to call. So, somewhere about a half an hour from now, or you may get a call from her.
we're going to give her a hard time and just tell her she just wanted her own space. She didn't want to share the space.
Well, she deserves it. I tell you, she's got quite a story. She's got quite a history. And again, when you start talking about women in the martial arts back then, it's like a women's story in almost any profession or any art or any sport. She was a trailblazer. I mean, she was the first in a lot of stuff. And I'm not going to steal her thunder because I'm going to let her tell her story. But believe me, she was one of the idols for me. I mean, when I started my Capital Classics, it was hard to become a national tournament. I had been a competitor for many, many years, but she was one of the ones that backed me. She was one of the ones that reached out to all the national champions, the top fighters, and say, "Hey, we need to go to D.C. and support this guy." And they came in and supported my tournament. And basically, the way I got the national thing is he's got more national competitors coming to his event than most national events. How can you not make him a top-rated event? And so she has quite a story. She had that kind of clout way back then when I was a competitor with her. But when I started promoting the U.S. Capital Classics, she was one of the ones that was instrumental and had enough clout as a legend then to be able to say, "Hey, guys, get out there and support this guy." And they came out. So I'm looking forward when you talk to her. Trust me, I will be on the line listening and maybe trying to call in and get a question in if I can.
Well, you know, that is great. And everyone, you know, we want to, you know, let you know, from this, the martial arts is growing. The Europa Games is coming up in Charlotte, North Carolina. The Europa Games and Fitness Festival is one of the largest one in the world. They're in four major cities. You know, Phoenix, Dallas, Tampa, and in Charlotte. And I've been asked to be the tournament director for the event. So we have two events going on. I'm the director for the AMAA Sport Karate event. So Master Jeff Dawes has an event going on up in Virginia. I'm going to be in Charlotte. We have two AMAA sanctioned events, you know, going on that weekend. But this is that great opportunity that the Europa Games has given to sport karate. And this is the first year since Charlotte, North Carolina, back in 2016. The event had over 35,000 people to come to the event. There are over 13 other sporting events going on at the same time. There's a jiu-jitsu championship going on, a jump rope championship going on, bodybuilding going on, aerobic training. I mean, there's just so many things going on that weekend. This is I think the only thing close to this would probably be the Arnold. And, you know, so we're very fortunate to have the opportunity. But, you know, that's what you do. You do things and doors begin to open. So we're asking everyone, no matter where you are in the country, we'd love for you to come in and participate in the event. And if you want to go to the website, it's www.amaa.com. europagames.com. And, you know, go to the website, check it out, or just go to Europa Games and go to the europagames.com. Go to the website, you know, check it out, and, you know, come out. You know, we want to see. I'm so excited about, you know, karate moving. I've been waiting, you know, 40 years for karate to move in that position to be an Olympic sport. You know, but as this moving forward, it's also promoting and motivating sport karate also. So this is that great opportunity that to build sport karate higher, so as we have athletes that now want to up their games and move into the competitive side of the karate side or the taekwondo side, then we can say that this is the base ground of becoming a American champion, but this is the base ground for you now to become an international, a world champion, an Olympian, you know. But, you know, so it's great that you built your foundation on sport karate, and this is what the Europa Games has given us the opportunity to, you know, be able to be able to do.
Man, that sounds exciting. Wow. You're going to have your hands filled there, Grandmaster. I mean, you're going to have your hands completely filled that weekend. I may have to call you and send you some juice or something to keep you pumped up.
Well, you know, the idle mind is the devil's workshop, so that makes me a good boy. I'm always a good boy, trying to move the wheel one more inch forward. Everyone, we truly do thank you for being a part of our program. And one last bit before we end, you know, this program will be replaying on Monday. We'll open up our radio station, and our radio station is going to have Professor Gary Lee, Lawrence Arthur, several other business coaches on providing information about how to grow your school. This is, you know, free. You know, share the station with your friends. We'll have music playing. We're actually going to have meditation mornings and meditation lunch. This is what we were talking about before, of really the next martial arts is going to be about the inner arts and preparing everyone, because we want people to become certified instructors through this new program that I'm launching. And, you know, so really go on, check it out. You can go to zenmind-body.com. The website is there. The product is up there. We're right now, after we get the show up, we're going to open the door. People that would like to become certified coaches and now begin to teach mindfulness training and meditation into their schools. Now, this is a great point. Grandmaster Brown, I want to say again, you know, thank you. Thank you first to you and Mrs. Brown for the friendship. You know, thank you for, you know, being on our show. Thank you for everything that you have done, you know, maybe not knowingly for the martial arts. I'd just like to say thank you personally.
Well, brother, it's my honor, and I love being on your show. Let me just say, you make it so easy and make it so much fun that I'm just happy to be invited to come on.
All right. Well, everyone, we want to say, you know, be blessed, and don't forget the U.S. Capitol Classics coming up in August the 4th and 5th. Be there. Go to our website, www.whoswhointhemartialarts.com, and nominate someone that we don't know, someone that has a story to tell. Pick up a copy of the book. Go to Century Martial Arts and order your copy of the book. Or you can go to Amazon and order a copy, Barnes & Noble, or just give me a call, 919-489-6100. This is Grandmaster Jesse Bowen saying, being blessed. Until the next time.